National News.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is Prince Nesta sitting in for Sun Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The Kickboxing Federation of Nigeria is organizing a three-day tournament for young kickboxers and mixed martial arts athletes in Yanagawa, Bayelsa State. The tournament is aimed at discovering new talents and exposing referees and other officials to the latest trend in the game. Gospel Obolo is the vice president of the Kickboxing Federation of Nigeria and co-sponsor of the tournament, and he spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the end of the tournament.
The tournament taking place in Bayelsa is a tournament that I've been doing to help the combat people, mostly kickboxing and MMA, for the past 4 years. And this is season four, the tag, the Battle of the Mangrove, season four, mostly for young kickboxers and young MMA fighters. Also, the idea of bringing the tournament is to make it a tourism center for other people that doesn't understand more about sports, that want it to be more of an entertain than the normal thing we see in the Olympics. So I use it to make sure that people love what we are doing and encourage the young fighters.
Do you see some potentials being discovered at the kickboxing tournament in Yanagawa?
Yes, the first season and the second season, we discover two very strong fighters like Onyeka. Now he's with the Nigeria Army. Through the tournament, we discover him. We have another one, Emma, that was discovered through that, and also he's fighting for the police. He went for the last world kickboxing tournament in Turkey, and he was a bronze medalist. And also Onyeka was in an African championship that he becomes a silver medalist. So we have discovered other ones that are doing well for their states, presenting their states in different weight categories that are doing very well. And also we use it to train up the local coaches when they are doing their seminars to make them really understand the ethics of the sport.
Do you also think that Nigeria has the capacity to groom and raise world champions in kickboxing?
Yes, Nigeria already has provided some good fighters in the world. We have about four world champions that are doing very well. You know about the Adesanya, you know about the Yusuf, and there's another one, Taiwo. They are doing very well. We have other ones fighting in different countries like Ukraine and South Africa, Nigerians that are doing very well in their own areas. The problem we have in Nigeria is sponsorship and partnership, because now I've been doing this program alone for 4 years and I've been looking for partners. Now I've went international, I've gotten another place in Turkey that we are opening an academy to make sure that they are always fit and they can do some international games too. So if we can get people like me or partners that are ready to come in and help the younger ones, we can take a lot of them out of the street. And mostly an ideal man is a devil workshop. In kickboxing is something that you are born in it. And if you cannot bring out that talent, sometimes they misuse it if they are not well trained. So that's why we need more people to come into kickboxing and train. And also kickboxing is a very high scoring sport that you can see in the National Sports Festival, that it has almost about 10 gold medals in kickboxing. And also in the Commonwealth, I think they are bringing kickboxing too. So it's something that Nigerians really need to participate more. And after this next Olympic, I think the next one, kickboxing will be coming. So it's something that Nigerians will start preparing for it.
There was Gospel Obolo, the Vice President of the Kickboxing Federation of Nigeria, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye on phone from Yenagoa, Nigeria. I'm Prince Nestor, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. British Nigerian heavyweight champion and former Olympic gold medalist Anthony Joshua made a substantial donation to help fund amateur boxing in Britain. The money will be distributed directly to clubs in most need of support through the national federations. The move comes in an effort to help support the sport survive the toughest period in its history. Amateur clubs up and down the country have been forced to close their doors during the pandemic, with little hope of reopening in the horizon. Joshua first became world champion in 2016 when he beat American Charles Martin to win the IBF title. His most recent fight was a 9th-round stoppage of Bulgarian Kubrat Pulev at Wembley Arena on 12th December. VOA's Gwen Uten filed the following report following the historic victory.
Of the 24 wins in Anthony Joshua's career, all but two were via knockout. The latest one occurred this month. Joshua suffered his sole defeat last year when he himself lost by technical knockout at the hands of American Andy Ruiz Jr. However, 6 months later, Joshua handedly won their rematch by unanimous decision. December 12th marked his first fight since that rematch when the 31-year-old retained his titles in front of his home crowd inside London's Wembley Arena. Joshua looked like he would end the fight early when he floored his Bulgarian opponent, Kubrat Pulev, in the third round. But the challenger recovered and the two men went toe-to-toe before Joshua produced a right-hand cross in the 9th round for a devastating knockout finish. Joshua was a man of few words after his victory and told reporters that he simply stuck to what he knows best and hoped the crowd was satisfied. And according to promoter Eddie Hearn, his heavyweight champion did what he had to do to get the job done.
It was a composed performance. It was a brutal performance. It was exactly what he needed going into 2021. Obviously, hasn't boxed for a year. Got 8 great rounds in and got a brutal knockout victory.
Joshua's latest victory sets up the prospect of a much-anticipated clash between Joshua and fellow countryman Tyson Fury, who currently holds the WBC belt. And Eddie Hearn says he is eager to get the two heavyweights together.
I can't make it clearer from our side. Everybody wants the fight. It's the natural fight. There's nobody on the team that doesn't want the fight. I think that sometimes you let emotions get in the way of screaming and shouting and calling out fights. And AJ is not the kind of guy that's going to scream and shout people's name. We know he wants to fight, of course. I'm going to keep shtum and just tell you that it's my job to deliver that fight next, and I'll do everything I can to deliver it. And we should start that immediately.
Ahead of the fight, Tyson Fury said his money was on Kubrat Pulev. But after the final bell, Fury was quick to call out Anthony Joshua on social media, where he placed his bets on himself, saying he would knock out Joshua by round 3. Fury's co-promoter Bob Arum also took to social media, and on Twitter, he said the wheels were in motion for what he called the biggest heavyweight championship fight since Ali Frazier in 1971. For his part, Anthony Joshua has reportedly said he is up for anything and added he's been chasing belts since 2013 and fulfilling the mandatories. And if that next belt is Tyson Fury, let it be Tyson Fury. Well, it looks like the stage is already being set for 2021 for one of the biggest events in boxing. And our thanks to Matchroom Sports for the audio in this report.
That's my colleague Gwen Uten's report filed after Joshua's brutal knockout victory over Pulev. Joshua, who holds the IBF, WBA and WBO titles, and his fellow countryman Tyson Fury, who is the WBC champion, currently occupy all of the world heavyweight titles between them. And Fury says he's certain the pair will meet in a unification bout in 2021.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat Music Show. Still on the African beat, world marathon record holder Kenyan Bridget Kosgei and Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei have been named among Africa's most influential persons of 2020. The duo is among 100 prominent persons listed by New Africa magazine as the influential Africans of 2020 due to their resilience and stellar performances in a sporting season, which was hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic. Bridget weathered harsh weather conditions to win the London Marathon in October, while Cheptegei stunningly smashed 3 world records in 5 kilometers, 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. Bridget, who became the youngest woman to win the London Marathon on her way to a world record win in Chicago 6 months later at the age of 25, described the recognition as humbling. On his part, Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei is the most decorated athlete of 2020, breaking 3 world records in the 4 races he contested. In March, although COVID-19 had resulted in either postponement or cancellation of several international races, the 24-year-old Ugandan carried over his outstanding form when competitions resumed.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Algerian playmaker Riyad Mahrez, Gabriel Jesus, Phil Foden and Emerick Lapore all recorded their names on the score sheet as Manchester City kept their Carabao Cup defense firmly on track after easing past Arsenal with a 4-1 victory at the Emirates Stadium to book their place in the semi-finals. The Citizens are now 18 games without a defeat in the League Cup as they bid to win the competition for a 4th straight time. Manchester City also became the first team to win 4 consecutive away games against Arsenal in all competitions since Chelsea did so 6 times in a row between 1960 and 1965. Arsenal, on the other hand, are without a win in 8 domestic League Cup and Cup matches and have also been eliminated from the quarter-final stage of the League Cup more times than any other side in the competition's history. The Gunners also conceded at least 4 times at home in a League Cup encounter for the first time since November 1998 under Arsene Wenger. City boss Pep Guardiola spoke out in support of the embattled Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta.
Our position as a manager, we will be judged for the results. Everybody knows it. I'm not the guy who Mikel needs to be defended because he didn't defend himself perfectly. Only I can say that I was with him a long period, the most successful period that this club, our club, had in the history in a row. And we cannot understand the success that we had without him. I learned a lot of him, more than an incredible human being, is an incredible manager. And sometimes our job, we need time. He won 2 titles. And after this season, with a pandemic situation, no fans here, many injuries they had. But I know his proposal, I know what we want to do, and just stand to be patient. So I'm not the guy who say what they have to do, but nor even a little run, bad results for a short period of time, we're going to change the opinion I have on him. He's an outstanding manager, incredible work ethic, put the club in front of any other decisions he has to make. And again, I'm not here to defend him because he can defend himself perfectly on and off the pitch.
That's Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola speaking out in support of his friend and former assistant Mikel Arteta after the League Cup quarter-final duel. Manchester United return to knockout action on Wednesday as they take on Everton in the quarter-final of the Carabao Cup. While Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will no doubt be desperate to advance to take a step closer to winning his first piece of silverware as United boss, he will be wary of the tough festive fixture schedule his side face. The last League Cup meeting between Everton and Manchester United was back in November 1993 in the fourth round, with the Red Devils winning 2-0 at Goodison Park. Manchester United also looking to win consecutive away matches against Everton for the first time since September 2007. While the Red Devils have only beaten the Toffees away from home twice in one season, once before, during the 1993-1994 season. Keeping tabs with the transfer market, the Red Devils are confident of securing a work permit for Atalanta winger Amad Diallo in order to add the teenager to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's squad during the January transfer window. United completed a deal worth an initial $25 million for Diallo on the final day of the summer transfer window in October, but were unable to fly the 18-year-old to Manchester due to the Ivory Coast-born player's ongoing wait for an Italian passport. He is yet to receive clearance to play in England and is still waiting for United's request for a work permit to be cleared by the UK government. The youngster has made just two first-team appearances for Atalanta this season, both coming from the substitutes bench, but he's regarded as one of the most exciting emerging talents in Europe.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Jose Mourinho says he will field a mixed side for Tottenham's Carabao Cup quarterfinals against Stoke City. Spurs are 2 wins away from reaching the final as he chased a first major trophy since 2008. Stoke will be without a number of other players due to injury, including former Chelsea midfielder John Obi Mikel, Wolves midfielder Joe Allen, and defender Ryan Shawcross. Argentine midfielder Giovanni Lo Celso is a doubt after suffering a hamstring injury in the 2-0 defeat to Leicester at the weekend, with fellow countryman Eric Lamela and defender Japhet Tanganga out. With the semi-finals one-legged games, Spurs are 3 victories from winning the competition for the first time since 2008, when they beat Chelsea 2-1 after extra time. Moving on to the Spanish La Liga, 6-time Ballon d'Or winner Lionel Messi scored his 644th goal for Barcelona during his side's victory over Real Valladolid to break Pelé's record of the most goals for one club. The 33-year-old scored Barca's third when he collected Pedri's backheel, took a touch, then slotted the ball past goalkeeper Jordi Masip. Allianz Tuesday, Atletico beat third place Real Sociedad 2-0 thanks to goals from Mario Hermoso and Marcos Llorente to go 3 points clear of Real Madrid, who play Granada at home on Wednesday. Diego Simeone has now reached his 300th victory with Atletico Madrid in all competitions, a figure that had only previously been reached by Luis Aragonés. Atletico returned to action after Christmas on December 30th as they host nearby Getafe at the Wanda Metropolitano.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with our voices on VOA.
I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The Brooklyn Nets were the story on Tuesday night in the opening game of the 2020-2021 regular season schedule, as Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving looked like they were already in mid-season form in their first official game as teammates, leading the Nets to a 125-99 win over Steph Curry and the Warriors at Barclays Center. Durant shook off 18 months of rust in a matter of moments and finished with 22 points in 25 minutes of his first official game since rupturing his Achilles tendon while playing for Golden State in Game 5 of the 2019 NBA Finals. Here's Durant speaking after the game.
Obviously, scoring 40 in the first quarter is, is what we would love to have every game, but it's not going to happen. But I think our defense, there's a reason why we was able to get some good points on the offensive side of the ball. You know, it was good that we held the lead and we was able to go out there and get a nice W.
Ivan led Brooklyn with 26 points and Caris LeVert scored 20 as the Nets led by as many as 38, pouring on the points the way the Phoenix Suns did when Nash was their point guard, or more recently Golden State did when Durant was their all-star forward. Ivan says the win was a team effort.
We want to be the best team. You know, we don't want to be a great collection of just me and KD and, you know, other guys that we have on the team. No, we're a great team, and we want to be identified as the Brooklyn Nets team. These guys here want to win just as bad as us. So if you have that winning mentality and attitude, it's easy for me to fall in line.
The Nets are expected to contend for the Eastern Conference title after finally getting Durant and Irving on the court together. And they use the first game of the shortened 72-game season to prove they might be worth the hype. Steph Curry had 20 points and 10 assists for the Warriors, a depleted team that looks like nothing like the powerhouse that won two titles in Durant 3 seasons there. Number 2 pick James Wiseman started at center despite his limited preparation and had 19 points and 6 rebounds. But the Warriors, playing without Draymond Green because of a sore right foot, need to find more shooting around Curry, with Klay Thompson set to miss a second straight season. Despite the loss, Warriors coach Steve Kerr is optimistic for the season.
I'm disappointed with the outcome, the effort, but it doesn't change the way I feel about this team. They're a great group. They're putting in the effort, and I feel really good about where we're going to be a couple months from now. But right now, we're nowhere close to being a good team.
In other matches, Paul George scored 26 of his 33 points in the second half. Kawhi Leonard added 26 points, and the Los Angeles Clippers rallied past the Los Angeles Lakers on the NBA Champions' ring ceremony night for a 116-109 victory. George went 13 of 18 with 5 three-pointers in an outstanding first game since agreeing to add 4 years and an $190 million to his contract with the Clippers, who never trailed in the latest meeting of Southern California's two NBA powerhouses. The Clippers beat the Lakers in the season opener for the second straight year. LeBron James scored 22 points and Anthony Davis had 18 for the Lakers, just 72 days after they finished off the Miami Heat in the NBA bubble. The Lakers returned from the shortest offseason in league history and received their championship ring, honoring their franchise's 17th title, but they couldn't keep up with George and Leonard down the stretch. Here's LeBron James on the loss.
This game one, it's the first test for us. We've literally been together for 9 days as a full group. We got some returning guys, but we got a lot of new pieces that's going to play a big role in our success this year.
Congolese Spanish basketball player Serge Ibaka scored 15 points in his debut for the Clippers, who hadn't played since blowing a 3-1 playoff series lead to Denver and winning a much-anticipated conference final showdown with the waiting Lakers in the bubble. The collapse led to coach Doc Rivers' departure, and Tyronn Lue moved down the bench to take over a star-studded team with several new additions. I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Two iconic athletes in Olympic and civil rights history celebrated birthdays in June of this year. American sprinter John Carlos turned 75 on June 5th, and his Olympic teammate Tommy Smith celebrated his 76th birthday the following day on June 6th. With more on their legacy in the fight for equality is my VOA colleague Gwen Uten.
John Carlos was born in Harlem, New York, and Tommy Smith was born 1,700 miles south in Clarksville, Texas. But in 1968, the two athletes were far from home when they came together in Mexico City to take part in the Olympic Games. Smith and Carlos won gold and bronze medals, respectively, in the 200-meter event. And as they stood on the podium, the two athletes raised their fists in what has become one of the greatest political protests in Olympic history. In 2018, the men were honored in Washington, D.C. on the 50th anniversary of their Olympic protest. They were given the Free Expression Award, presented to them by retired NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. During the ceremony, Kareem recalled the moment in 1968 that shook the world.
As the Star Spangled Banner played, Tommy and John bowed their heads and raised their gloved fists in a defiant demand for human rights that echoed around the world. Their protest against the unjust treatment of Black Americans and people of color everywhere was a watershed moment in civil rights history.
Following their protests, the athletes were booed and cursed as they left the podium, and the International Olympic Committee strongly condemned their political statement. As a result, John Carlos and Tommy Smith were banned from the Olympic Village and sent home. They faced death threats and racial abuse upon their return to the United States. Australian sprinter Peter Norman, the silver medalist in that same race, was in support of their protest on the medal stand. He wore a small badge on his uniform that read Olympic Project for Human Rights, an organization that opposed racism in sport. For his part, Norman was later shunned by the International and Australian Olympic Committees and never ran in an Olympic event again. Peter Norman died in 2006. 6 years later, the Australian Parliament recognized Norman's achievements and issued an apology for the treatment he received upon his return to Australia after the 1968 Olympics. In his acceptance speech in 2018, John Carlos paid tribute to Norman, who is often regarded as the forgotten man.
50 years ago, I stood on a podium with two individuals, Tommy Smith and another blue-eyed white guy by the name of Peter Norman. And they tried to whitewash him and wipe him out of history like he didn't exist. And then you look back at modern day with young Mr. Kaepernick taking a knee. He wasn't the only one to take a knee. They had some white individuals that took a knee and took their hand and put it on his shoulder and said, I lend support to you. It whitewashed all those white football players too to show you that you should not have moral character within your soul and your mind and your spirit to say, I don't care about what your ethnic background is. I don't care about what your economic state is. All I care about is whether you're doing the right thing and God is telling me to support you. It's your turn to step up. It's your turn to get up on the podium one day where I can say, hey, let's get a trophy, let's get a medal, let's give it to them because they deserve it.
And Tommy Smith called on others to join in the fight for equality.
In the face of adversity, the struggle continues. Now, there's many of us look for comfort in non-involvement. But see, you can run, but you cannot hide.
Last year, Tommy Smith and John Carlos received the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee's highest honor, induction into the organization's Hall of Fame. But for decades following their 1968 protest, the two men were left on the sidelines of the U.S. Olympic movement. Their demand for racial equality occurred just 6 months after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. 52 years later, that call for for justice is still being heard around the world. Tommy Smith is quoted as saying, "Without sacrifice, there can be no forward movement. You have to give up something before you can receive something, and usually that something is much better." A 22-foot statue depicting Smith, John Carlos, and Peter Norman in their famous stance is on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., and the Black Power salute lives on as an iconic symbol in the fight for human rights.
And that wraps up the December 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Mukbilia Barrow, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Prince Nesta, sitting in for Sunny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.